and we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February 1st, 2019. I'm your host, Carol Davies McIntosh, and I'm joined today by my co-host and operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
We have an interview with Josie Dutois from the Vervet Monkey Foundation in Sandzien, South Africa. She explains not only the sanctuary, but also an exciting project that they've embarked on called the Vervet Forest, which is as much about other species as it is about vervets. This is coming up in just a few minutes.
They always say that the vervet monkey population is increasing. We say, no, it's not increasing. It's increasing in urban areas because you keep chopping down all of their forest.
We take responsibility for like really small parts of our lives, but our lives project outwards.
They're cutting down the forests, they're cutting down everything, not for people to eat, to feed the cattle, to feed people.
The traditional beliefs mingling in with, you know, capitalism and trying to create wealth, blah, 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 it's a mess. There has to be a change and shift in human attitude at some point.
We really need to try and live with our neighbours.
I think when you get back to nature and you start seeing things from that side, you look at the world very differently.
You can never be able to coexist with animals and human habitation 100%, but at least try and keep what you can.
Today is our monkey show. Here are a few monkey facts.
I like that fact.
That's our background for today.
We have some monkeys in the studio.
Yeah, that's right. We're full of them. They're climbing around. In researching this show, I came across some really interesting things. There are two kind of big groups of monkeys, one called New World monkeys, and those are the ones that are in like South America and Central America, and then the Old World monkeys are in Africa and Asia. And they're quite different. The New World monkeys can actually, those are the ones that have the prehensile tails that they can actually hang from their tails. The Old World or the African Asian monkeys can't actually hang from their tails. Did you know that?
I wouldn't have known that. See? Actually, I think this is going to be a very educational show for me. I hope our listeners as well, because we're going to learn all about monkeys. I started learning last night. I watched the film that we'll be speaking about today.
How did you like it?
So the film is called The Vervet Forest, and it's based on who we'll be speaking to today from the sanctuary in South Africa that mm-hmm. teaches about these vervet monkeys. You might have seen them if you've been on travels. I think I saw them in India, like little monkeys hanging around everywhere. But they're seen as pests in the local area in South Africa where there are a lot of them, because one person said that he killed 25 of them the week before in his backyard because they're just a pest to him,
right?
Which I find quite astonishing and astonishingly cruel. And then he was asked, interviewer said, well, isn't that cruel? He goes, I'm not cruel. A little bit of cognitive dissonance there.
Right.
But anyways, we look at the film and we learn the stories of these five newborn baby tiny monkeys that look just and act just like a little human being. Really not a lot of difference.
No.
And to think that these animals are being shot with rifles, and then it's the mothers that are being shot because they're going into people's gardens
to get the food.
To take their food mm-hmm. because they like to steal a pumpkin or an eggplant here and there. And the farmers and the people who grow these crops are just, like, for them, that's like, it's putting them over the edge, and they don't want to deal with it, and they shoot them. So they
shoot the moms.
They shoot the moms, yeah, because they're out getting the food, and then the babies are left orphaned, and they're found. And in this film, we hear the stories of these five little babies and their plight and their struggles and some successes with them trying to get adoptive mothers.
Yes, monkey mothers.
Of course.
Yes,
that's what I meant.
But actually, it's interesting because the farmers will shoot the moms, and then they'll find the babies, and then they'll take the babies into the vervet sanctuary. So there's a lot of cognitive dissonance there.
There is, especially because the farmers are shooting the animals because they're so angry that some monkey came and stole a mango or something, and then they end up actually donating all of their surplus crops, fruits and vegetables, to the monkey sanctuary to feed the monkeys that were the babies of the mothers who they killed for taking a couple of these items.
This is part of what the Vervet Foundation does, is they do try to educate. They try to educate the farmers. They try to bring in school children and try to educate them just about how they can live in harmony with these monkeys. And when they really looked through the fields, the farmers' fields, they didn't really find that many plants that were ruined by the monkeys. And the monkeys actually eat some of the bugs and things that ruin the crops.
Right.
So they're beneficial to the environment.
Yeah. I would think, you know, we're all earthlings and we all need to live in harmony with each other. And I think if I was a farmer, all I can say is that, you know, having those animals there is just part of your surroundings and it's part of where they live. You live in their home. You share a home together. We share this planet with all these animals. But if they're literally in your backyard and in your garden and on your crops, don't shoot them. It's such a sad story to see these baby orphans and the struggles that they go through and the fact that they now need to make or they want to make a sanctuary, basically a forest
for a forest.
Yeah,
they want it to be a completely balanced, ecologically balanced forest. So there, a lot of South Africa has been taken up with crops, and they've
80% of their land. Yeah. I learned in that film is crops.
Right. What these people are trying to do is they're trying to work in harmony with the farmers, which is what we're seeing that a little bit more. I've just read also about a new reserve project that was just granted in Tanzania. So after 40 years of research and conservation efforts, they have just created a new national park. It's Magomra National Reserve, and it's located in south central Tanzania. It's over 26 square kilometers. So they found there's a lot of plants and animals there that are threatened species, bush babies, elephants, hippopotamus, and the endangered red colobus monkey. So the management plan for this new reserve is to educate the villagers about why they need to have the trees and the animals in this park, to educate them to be the rangers of the park so that they are actually getting employment from it. And they want what they charge the tourists, the ecotourism operations, some of that money will actually go back to the specific village. So those people are benefiting from living in harmony with the animals.
As it hopefully should be, right? So it was really, I found it to be a really eye-opening film. I'm glad I saw it. Mm-hmm. And we'll be learning more about it later on in the show.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
The The ways that many animal sanctuaries get started is varied, but quite often involves a response to an immediate and grave need of an animal. About 30 years ago, a kind heart responded to a baby monkey's need, and 4 years later, the Vervet Monkey Foundation was created. Now, almost 25 years on, the foundation is working towards a new project. It's a holistic approach to the monkeys, people, and the planet. It's called the Vervet Forest Project. Earlier this week, I spoke with one of the directors of the Vervet Monkey Foundation, Josie Dutoit. Hello, Josie. Thanks for joining us on Animal Voices today. I want to talk to you about three separate things here today. The Vervet Monkey Foundation, the Vervet Forest Project, and the movie called The Vervet Forest.
Okay, thank you for having me on the show. I'm delighted to be able to share our new project, especially with you, and also the movie, as well as a bit of background towards the Vervet Monkey Foundation.
Great. So let's start at the beginning. How did the Vervet Monkey Foundation come into being to start with?
Well, it all started with one monkey, as I think many sanctuaries do. And it's quite an interesting story about how the fight for this one monkey ended up to the sanctuary it is today. It was actually Dave, who was working as a beekeeper on a farm, was handed in this tiny baby vervet monkey by his farm workers. He basically, one of the farm workers found this baby, and the baby could just literally fit into the palm of Dave's hand. It still had its umbilical cord attached, and it was, you know, very, very small. He didn't know what to do with this monkey. Although being an animal lover, he'd never come across, you know, an orphan that would need lots of attention and care before. He must have been just a day or two old, so he was very, very, very young, literally just recently born. And Dave contacted the authorities, the Nature Conservation Authorities, thinking, you know, they look after nature and so on. And actually, to his dismay, what they said was that this little monkey that he found was vermin. And so the advice he got was literally to kill the monkey. That it had to be killed. And to do this, they gave him advice to just put him in a black plastic bag, take him behind the house, and just smack him with a spade, and that will kill him.
Oh my goodness.
That was absolutely shocking to him. So, of course, you know, Dave, being an animal lover, decided, well, he's definitely not going to do that. How can he help this one little monkey to actually survive, and what must he do with it? So he actually contacted a vet in Kruger National Park to get some advice as to what to feed the little guy. And he gave him some honey water, and he found a milk formula that worked for the baby. He hand-raised this one little monkey. Now, the problem being is it was illegal to keep monkeys in your own hands, and you were told you must kill it. So there was many court cases had to basically save the life of this one little monkey, who was called Regus. Regus's mum had actually been shot by a farmer, and that's how he came to be orphaned. So there were court cases from 1989, when Regus was found, right up until he won the court case. And then in 1993, then the Vervet Monkey Foundation was established by Dave, and then alongside him, his friend Arthur Hunt. And that's how the foundation came to arise. Basically, people started hearing about, you know, this one monkey that had been saved, and they'd find other orphans that needed help. And the Vervet Monkey Foundation was really started as a safe place for these monkeys to go that were usually as a result of human wildlife conflict.
So now, where exactly is the Vervet Monkey Foundation? It's in South Africa, and I think to the east part, right?
Yeah, it's in Zanin, Limpopo province. So we're actually about 1 hour from Kruger National Park.
Okay. That's a pretty big landmark in South Africa for most people. How did that little monkey do?
He did amazingly well. He did survive, and he lived actually till he was around 18 years old at the sanctuary. So he was in an enclosure with other monkeys during the last years of his life. Then he was given extra special care till he passed away at an old age of 18 years.
18. Wow. The court cases and whatnot went on for years, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It was case after case fighting for him, for why he should be saved. And eventually, you know, they did get the rights to a rehabilitation center from all those years of the court cases as well. They fought for another monkey called Scro, who also lived out his life at the sanctuary as well. So, yeah, there was a lot of legal aspect going on before the foundation could be established.
Amazing. I was wondering also how you came to be there. I know that you were actually raised in England, and it seems to me that it's a big leap to go from living in England to living in South Africa. Can you tell the story of how you became to be the co-director?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some days I still can't believe I'm actually here, you know, living this kind of dream of helping these animals. So I've always worked with animals. I've always volunteered in England. I grew up in England, different shelters, stables and so on, wildlife rescues. And I always wanted a career with animals right from a young age. So I became a veterinary nurse, which was, I guess, the normal route then for a couple of years. And then I moved into the field of veterinary nutrition, where I spent my last 4 years in England. And it was during this job that my friend, who was sat next to me at work, said she was thinking about volunteering with turtles. I didn't think any more of it. I just thought, wow, that would be amazing. And in fact, I was going through a hard time. I had some depression and pain, and just kind of also wanted a change. And I thought, you know what, rather than stay at home and, you know, be even more miserable, let's see what I can do with animals, because that's definitely my love and my passion. And if I can help them, then it would be amazing. So I looked up volunteering projects. And to be honest with you, I looked up the Vervet Monkey Foundation and I stopped there. I saw this project. It was with monkeys. It was also a vegetarian organization, and which would suit me for eating, because I was also vegetarian and the ethics.
Right.
And it was, you know, living in nature. We worked taking care of these little orphans. You know, I can even probably tell you the names of them. There was Pedro, there was Bushman. You know, there were all these little guys that we looked after during the 4 weeks. And whilst we weren't looking after them, we were building them a new area to live. So that was the 4 weeks that I volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't understand why people would perceive them as pests, or why people did them. It didn't make any sense to me after working with them, how amazingly intelligent they were, that I actually wanted to do some work from home for the monkeys. So I actually contacted the foundation and said, you know, is there something I can help with the monkeys from home? Can I do fundraising, or, you know, how can I help? Thank you. Looking for a volunteer coordinator to actually come back to South Africa. How would you finance it? And, you know, all the things that kind of stop you going ahead with something. And in the end, at the end of the phone call, I just said, you know what? Yes, I would love to come back. I would love to come back for 3 years and be the volunteer coordinator. I literally sold my house in England.
You sold your house? I
gave 3 months notice for my job, which I loved. But, you know, I loved this one. I sold my house. I even took my dog with me. So I got him his passport. And, you know, he was from England. I wasn't going to leave him behind. So I took him with me. And it was all organized for me to then go 3 months later. And I was there. And I arrived as volunteer coordinator in February 2006.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, it's a whole different country. You know, you definitely have to get used to the way of life here. But, you know, the wildlife's amazing, the country's amazing, and what I was doing for these little guys, I just, you know, it was almost felt like my calling, and that's where I needed to be in life. And like I say, it became my passion and my purpose. And then a few years later, I became the animal manager, because I had lots of experience with the animal side. And then it wasn't until 2009 when sadly Arthur Hunt, who was the co-founder, he passed away suddenly overnight of a heart attack, which was a big shock to the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And then I'd had probably the most experience there after having been there a while. So I started to run the sanctuary, and then, you know, so I became the director of the sanctuary. And Dave, who was the co-founder, he still had his job trying to actually finance the sanctuary. But he then joined me in directing the sanctuary later on, so we became co-directors from there.
Wow. And there you are today. So good for years later, and you're still...
Absolutely.
And now you've got this whole big other project going on. But before we go into that, tell everybody about the vervets. Tell us all about this monkey. How big are they? What's their social structure? How long do they live?
They're about the size of a cat. They're gray with black faces. And you'll have, you know, the second in line and the third and so on. And then you'll also have the males with their hierarchies as well. So it's very complex. And I think people forget, you know, that protective of their baby, just like we would. So they do live in family groups. They've adapted well to different circumstances because, you know, they've had to. Their forests have been destroyed. So now they're coming more into urban environments. You know, they're having to, and they're literally trying to adapt in much smaller groups because they're in decline than they would have in the past. So yeah, that's the little characters, the little guys. And they certainly all have individual personalities, just like us.
Of course. And how big are their troops that they live in now?
But now, because of my group, the smallest, say 15 to, you know, 15 to 30, which is just the numbers are actually declining because the troop sizes are just, you know, so much less than they once were many years ago.
How many of these, and I know the vervet, I was in South Africa a couple of years ago and staying in some treehouse type of, on a eco reserve, and the vervets would come right up to the windows and look in the window, you know, of the bathroom or something and side somehow.
Sure.
Yeah, so they're very cute. They're very, you can tell they're very bright. They're very quick and bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we've had monkeys shot by pellet guns in residential areas just because, you know, they've kind of come near their windows. So it's very challenging within this country, but we are trying to do a lot of education around that.
Mm-hmm. So how many vervets do you have currently?
Currently, and to be honest, I've lost count with the babies this season, but we've got around 570 monkeys.
Wow.
And this season alone, we took in, so far we've taken in about 20, well, we had a couple arrive last night, so we've got about 26 orphans just in the last 2 months.
26. And now, yeah. Is this the season of babies right now?
Sure, it's November, usually November to February, but we've had a lot of droughts, so it seems to be getting a little bit later in the year. So it tended to start the end of November this year and then go on. We're still actually receiving babies now as well.
I remember hearing that, I guess, an attempt to control the population that the males monkeys have vasectomies. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We vasectomized the males, so it's not castration, so we don't change any of their behavior.
Right.
They're still able to mate, they just can't have babies.
Right.
And the reason we do that is because if we were to become a breeding center with that many animals, then we wouldn't be able to have room or funding to take in the orphans for the family groups.
Right.
So that's the reason we do it. Mm-hmm. Of course, if they were released and we had other males, you know, they could still other non-vasectomized males, then the troop could still breed. So for releasing, it wouldn't be a problem that way either.
Right. What percentage of those 570-odd monkeys are you able to eventually release?
To give you an idea how the sanctuary is, we've got 14 enclosures which have electrified fencing around with indigenous bush inside. So I would probably say that 10 out of the 14 enclosures could be released as troop releases.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other monkeys that can't be released for various reasons?
So other monkeys such as we get some adult expats in that are very used to people, or perhaps because they're so used to people, they could then be aggressive or jump on somebody or basically go and seek out human contact. So some of those monkeys won't be able to be released, but they'll stay at the sanctuary and live out their lives. And some of the enclosures that we've got, you know, can even be the same size as what they're able to survive in the wild as well.
Right.
So they'd certainly still have a happy life at the sanctuary, but, you know, they'd still have fences around them.
You actually have a blind monkey, or one or two, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I was just showing them to somebody yesterday. We've got... a couple of blind monkeys. We've got one called Shanti Ray. He was shot by a pellet gun in a residential area. And sadly, in fact, we know that it was a teenager just shooting a pellet gun at a weekend. He said because he had nothing else to do. You know, that's as shocking as it gets. There's also another one that's got one eye because he was also shot with a pellet gun. And then we've got another one, we don't know how she came to be, but she was also shot by a pellet gun as well. So they live in a blind enclosure. And they actually, it's amazing how well they've adapted. Mm-hmm. When these two little guys first arrived, they were 1 year old. We actually put them in a small cage. And we had one of our seeing monkey mums, who could see, who wasn't blind, look after Shanti Ray and JB. And when they came out of the little cage, then Shasta, the mum, she literally just, you know, gave them a hug and she groomed them. And it's almost like she knew they were blind because she actually walked in front of this one monkey as he was about to bump into the wall. Mm-hmm. And she kind of guided him around the enclosure. It was quite amazing. So, yeah, although they are blind, they still have a life at the sanctuary in a smaller family group that they can actually, you know, live their days out in. But it's extremely sad that as a result, again, of being shot, that, yes, you know, they've now had to live their life without their sight, basically.
Right. Yeah. But also amazing that they can still have a valuable life and enjoy their lives.
Sure. They play, they somersault, they jump around on their branches. It's quite amazing. I mean, to look at them, you wouldn't actually know they were blind if you didn't know, apart from when they put their hands on their ground to find the food. Other than that, then they're actually doing very good.
Getting back to the babies, you said you have 26 of them now. What kind of formula milk do you feed them?
We used to feed them a cow's milk formula, which had more diarrhea. So we actually switched to a soy milk formula, a baby formula, and we found that, you know, everything became much more normal. Their digestion was better, and they were like a normal size as well. So that's what we use now, as a baby soy milk formula.
A baby soy milk formula for formulated for humans.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're primates, then mm-hmm. a lot of the medication we use, you know, can be similar to what we use for humans as well, because they're very similar to us.
Interesting. At a certain time, you, I guess, wean them or get them onto more like solid food, like we would a human child. When do you start giving them the fruits and things and vegetables?
Sure. We usually give them, start feeding them food just after a few weeks old, then they're already able to eat soft fruits, and then they gradually start to eat more foods similar to humans actually, and then they'll have less milk. They do stay on their milk formula up until 1 year old. And then after that they're completely fully weaned and they don't need milk anymore.
Oh, so do you only feed them the foods that they would get in the wild, or how do you know what to feed them?
We wish we could. However, we don't have all the indigenous food that we would like to be able to give them and what's in what they would have naturally. Mm-hmm. But we do try and mimic that. So, you know, most of their diet is vegetation, is indigenous fruit. They do have a very small percentage of insects that they eat in the rainy season. Oh. And so what we do is we have to give them commercial fruits because that's what's available. We do also pick some fruits that we've got at the sanctuary straight from the trees. We'll pick them some grasses and leaves. And then we also have things like seed pods growing naturally that we give them. And to supplement that, then we would also give them things like soaked sunflower seeds so that we can give extra protein for them that they would naturally, you know, find in the wild from other seed pods and so on as well.
Right.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada.
And you have something called a baby cabin. Is that for the young one?
Yes, we've got a couple of baby cabins in areas now. So we have, when the baby arrives, we basically have, you know, one-on-one carer for them. One or two people will be their primary carer, taking care of them, teaching them how to drink from a bottle. So we give them like puppy or kitten milk bottles. And then the people take care of them overnight as well. And that's where they stay in the baby cabin. So we've got a bed in there and they stay in there with the babies, because being so young, you know, babies do need that care and comfort just like a human baby would.
Right. So you have baby mums staying in the cabins with the babies. That's wonderful.
Yeah, at that stage, it's the humans taking care of them, our staff in the quarantine area, yeah.
But surely you can't take care of 26 at one time.
Luckily for us, then we didn't receive them all at one time, but definitely within the last 2 months. But that's where our monkey foster mum program comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the way we work this foster mum program is we'll hand raise the little guys that come in very young. They might come in a couple of days old, or they might come in at 4 weeks old. So we'll have somebody teaching them the bottle. And then after they've been in their quarantine area, they'll go to somewhere called Disneyland, which is our fun play area for the monkeys, where they can meet other babies. It's quite an apt name. And then they'll also learn to actually go off the human mum and go through a little cage, a milk feeding cage that's specially designed with a hole in the front so that the baby can feed itself from the milk bottle without having to have contact with humans. They usually do this around 6 weeks old. They can actually learn to feed themselves. So we're still obviously there to give them the comfort and the love and the care, you know, that their mum would. But they can actually now feed themselves from this bottle, which means we don't need to, you know, be providing that milk for them.
Is there, what's the reason behind that you want them to feed themselves? Does that have something to do with them moving?
So that comes to the next stage. So when they're, yeah, absolutely. So if they can feed themselves at 6 weeks old, what we can do is actually take one of our females from the troop and introduce them to that baby for the mum to take care of the baby instead of us. So at 6 weeks old, we can already be hands off, meaning we don't have any contact with the baby. We just put the milk in this little feeding cage, and then the mum is literally carrying the baby around, bonding with the baby just as if it was her own, which is amazing. I mean, they adopt these babies like they were their own. By the end of the evening, they're actually snuggled up and cuddling on their perch together as if nothing's ever happened.
Amazing.
So it's quite incredible to see. And then after three months, then they're able to actually go in the troop and literally live a natural life in their group with the other monkeys and their foster mum. And then they can go in this little feeding cage within the group and drink their milk, which means they actually become scared of us again. They still have their inherent fear of humans. And that's one of our rehabilitation methods that we're very proud of, I think, is, you know, being able to be hands off with these little guys from 6 weeks old and getting them where they belong, you know, back in with their group.
Do they remember their baby mum, their human first contact?
Even their primary human carer, we've had cases where we've had to perhaps pull a baby away from the foster mum if it's got an injury or sickness.
Mm-hmm.
And if we then go into that cage, the little baby even runs away from their primary carer and they go straight back to their monkey mum. I think it's more, you know, innate fear than that they don't remember, because even after a few days, then they kind of settle into troop life as if they were born in the wild, which is fantastic for us.
Which is your goal all along. I understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
That there are other sanctuaries that have adopted your procedures. Is that correct?
We've definitely done some talking and tried to get some other sanctuaries to use this program, because, you know, the old methods, including ourselves, you know, the way we used to do it is raise them until they were weaned. But then, of course, what you're doing is humanizing these monkeys, not really to a release point. So there are some sanctuaries, I believe, that have started doing it. I'm not sure if they are able to let them out so quickly at 3 months old, but it is something we're trying to encourage, you know, for other people to do now that it's worked for more than 200 of our orphans. We've done this way as well. Since 2011, we've started doing this.
And how did you determine the procedure? Did you come
Well, it was interesting, but what I did, in fact, is there was already a method, you know, that Dave and Arthur had developed at the sanctuary with the feeding cage, but it was done a slightly different way. And again, the orphans weren't able to get out till 6 months old. And after, you know, doing a lot of research into the studies of vervet monkeys, I could see that at 3 months old, this is when babies usually move away from their mum more. Thinking in my head, how can we get it to be shorter? And if we can get the baby to move away from mum at its natural age that they would do so, then surely we can then, you know, put this program in place where they would actually get off their mum and then go towards the feeding cave to drink. So it was really based on the studies that have been done on behavior in the wild at what age do infants do different things. And that's how we came to develop it. We tried it first, you know, introducing the baby through the other side of the fence so that the mum could get used to it. And we found that, you know, the mums really just wanted to hug these babies and take care of them. And if we can do it sooner, then why not? And that's when we followed the steps of what happened naturally in terms of moving away from mum and how we could get them into troops earlier.
That's wonderful that you could figure that out and make that happen for them. That's really remarkable. Congratulations on that. It must cost a fortune to run this foundation. Do you mind sharing with us how much and where does your money come from?
Yeah, it absolutely does cost a lot. I think it costs around, say, $25,000 a month just to keep the foundation going.
Wow.
We're actually a registered nonprofit, so we don't receive any help from governments or, you know, businesses and so on. But luckily, we do actually have our volunteer program where people pay to come and volunteer. So, in fact, a lot of the volunteers will then go home and do things like fundraising or get involved that way. And we have, you know, our movie screenings, which, you know, we can talk about as well. But all the money goes towards things like spending on vets bills. Our vehicles are a big cost to us because we go out on rescues. We have to collect monkey food every day, food for the volunteers, the petrol. You know, we have local staff that we pay, deworming medicine, and lots of maintenance projects, and obviously constructing enclosures for them as well. So yeah, nothing goes to waste for sure.
Right.
You know, it didn't start like that. We only had volunteers since 2003. Before then, Dave was actually running two businesses to finance the foundation. So we're very lucky to have had, you know, the volunteer program started, because that's helped a lot.
You're getting a lot of your funding from people actually coming there and living there and volunteering for several weeks or months or whatever, is that right?
That's right, because they're paying towards their food and accommodation, and then there's a percentage after that will go directly to the care of the monkeys. So that's, you know, how we keep funded. But not only right. that, you know, like they, the volunteers will actually go home and want to continue helping the monkeys from there internationally.
Mm-hmm. So they do their fundraising at home and that helps you out as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, you get some of the farmers that really don't like these monkeys to donate their imperfect crops, things that they can't actually sell.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually quite interesting how it happens as well with, you know, farmers as such, because what often happens is there's some crop damage. Unfortunately, monkeys are big, they can be seen, and if they're carrying away a ripe mango, then, you know, the monkey's going to get the blame for everything because that's what can be seen at the time. But the monkeys play such a role in the ecosystem as to how they actually can help, because they eat insects. They also only eat ripe fruit. They don't eat the green crops. Mm-hmm. So for commercial farmers, then, you know, it's not really a waste if they're eating the ripe fruit, because that's the fruit that they actually can't sell. So there's a lot of kind of blame that goes on to the monkey. And interestingly enough, somebody may shoot the mum, but then they may bring us the orphan, because, you know, they can't bring themselves to shoot this tiny baby monkey, mm-hmm. Even though it's the same animal. That's definitely happened quite a few times that I've been there, is the orphan has been brought in directly, which is really sad, because now that orphan's got no mum. But somebody did care enough to bring the baby to us. But yeah, the farmers, we do get some. The waste food probably isn't actually good enough for the monkeys that we're caring for. So we do find that we're having to buy more. But for sure, we do get some local support as well.
So the monkeys take the brunt of a lot of problems that the farmers are having. And saying that vervet monkeys actually have quite a benefit to the environment. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Sure. Regarding, you know, the farming, obviously there's things like the drought, there's transportation problems or, you know, other problems that are going around depending where the farm is positioned. And there are things that, you know, we can also help give of advice to people as well. So we're not just blaming, you know, the farming community. We're also trying to seek, you know, help for them as well. But from all the investigations that we've done, we've found that, you know, the damage isn't as large as what people say with the monkeys. So right. They do have the benefits in the environment, the monkeys, like we say. So they'll control the insect populations, which actually, you know, may then eat the crops. They'll also end up propagating certain species of tree. So some of the tree's seeds need to actually go through the digestive tract of an animal to actually then germinate. And therefore, the monkeys are playing a role. We actually call them kind of the gardeners of the forest, because right. There's been some barren areas of land that monkeys have moved across, and, you know, all these trees keep popping up, which is fantastic. So, you know, they're kind of creating their own forest as well. They're also helping pollination. They jump from tree to tree, which is like a shaking motion, which spreads the pollens. And they also spread seeds by, you know, they'll eat different seed pods, and then they'll walk along and they'll drop bits and so on. And that helps to spread seeds as well. So they definitely have this big role in the ecosystem, which right. Is also something, you know, we're trying to educate people on out here as well.
That reminds me of what they talk about East Africa, about the elephants distributing the seeds and whatnot as well.
Yeah, it's just like that, actually. I mean, every animal, you know, has a role somewhere. It's just we need to find it.
Exactly. When I was watching the Vervet Forest movie, I was really pleasantly surprised that the movie goes into a lot of discussion about the land and the ecosystem, the earth, and really humans' impacts on the earth. And you brought in soil management experts, experts on monoculture and other environmental issues. Like I said, I was surprised. I was expecting the film to be all about vervets, but it's so much more. Why did you bring these experts in to be part of the Vervet Forest project?
Yeah, I mean, Carl Salazar, who's the director of the movie, he wanted the movie to basically be not just about the vervets, but there's so much more. Everything is interconnected as to, you know, how do we look after their habitat? How do we look after their forests? Because if we're looking after vervets and they've got no forest to live in, then that's a big problem for us, because we have nowhere to put them anymore. So it's all interconnected. We can't protect an animal without its habitat, moving towards more ethical living, you know, looking into farming methods such as the permaculture, which is living, it's farming in harmony with nature as well. So everything that we're doing in the Vervet Monkey Foundation, yes, it's about the monkeys, but they live on this planet as we do too. So, you know, how can we help both the animals and the planet and their habitats, which is also why we're moving towards promoting more of a plant-based diet at the same time as well. Everything we're consuming and the way we're doing things can have an impact for both the habitat, for wildlife. Everything is entwined, and we need to have kind of like a holistic whole approach. There's lots of different indigenous animals involved here, as well as the land that they inhabit.
So the project, the movie was made to promote the Vervet Forest project, is that right?
Yes.
And the project,
yep, that's right. Yep.
The Vervet Forest project is actually part of the Vervet Monkey Foundation.
Yes. In fact, the Vervet Forest project has always been a dream of the Vervet Monkey Foundation, but in the past it's been a distant dream. And now it's actually finally being created. So the vision began to grow at a time when the sanctuary was actually struggling financially. We aimed to create, you know, this sustainable sanctuary, first of all, because we knew that we had to first create a sustainable sanctuary to then evolve to make this dream come true, which is now sustainable financially. And now we're able to create this forest. And Vervet Forest is basically something we want to create in South Africa that's going to be around 300 hectare area of land, which is quite a large area. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fully have rivers running through and some water where the monkeys can actually be released. So it will be troops of our monkeys to be released there. But it's so much more than that. And I think that's what the Vervet Forest movie portrays as well. The forest is not just going to be a place for monkeys, but it's also going to be a whole thriving, protected ecosystem, which is going to enable other indigenous animals to thrive. It's going to be an area of land, you know, that's going to be untouched from hunters or culling or urbanization and all the different problems that we're facing for wildlife today. So we also, you know, that's kind of phase one. We want to release the monkeys onto the land and look after the land. But then phase two, we want to actually create facilities which are all going to be ethical again, so run on solar power. We would like to be able to teach people about human-wildlife conflict. We'd like to teach them about ethical living, you know, and how they can really reduce their carbon footprint in a way that helps the animals, the planet, and themselves as well. And this is what the Vervet Forest is going to be. It's this whole education facility, but protecting this big piece of land within South Africa for the monkeys, for the animals, and also, you know, towards ethical living, but also coming from a place, you know, our values are kindness and compassion as well. So if we can teach compassion to the local communities, then, you know, with animals, then it also teaches people to be more compassionate to each other as well. And that's something, you know, we strongly believe and want to work on community outreach here in South Africa as well.
And a lot of that is explained in the movie, which is, by the way, it's a beautiful, beautiful movie. I really enjoyed watching it. It's very touching as well. How can people see the Vervet Forest movie?
The Vervet Forest movie is currently only being held by screenings, but all over the world. So people can either find a screening near them, and I would suggest they contact myself via the website. They could show the movie to other people. It could be a university, a cinema. It could even be their living room and invite, you know, 20 people round to watch the movie. So it can be really simple if they want to see the movie. We do charge a small fee just to see it, which obviously then helps to get the forest. Everything raised goes towards the forest. And the trailer as well, the movie trailer, can actually be viewed on the website, vervetforest.com. And also there's a Vervet Forest YouTube series as well, which there are many episodes. I think there were something like 36 episodes in the first series, and we're now on season two. And if people also want to watch something, there was a different version on National Geographic Wild called The Little Monkey House, which is a different version of the Vervet Forest, and it was only screened in certain countries. But, you know, the movie has been out there as well. So definitely to contact myself if people are interested in watching the movie. It's touched so many hearts worldwide. I mean, it follows the story of these five orphaned vervets that are now living at the sanctuary, their stories, but it also looks into the culture of South Africa and, like we say, about the environment, the land. And it's just a really beautiful film that Carl's produced. And by the way, he was also a previous volunteer that came back as a film director from Los Angeles. So, yeah, it's fantastic how everything's, you know, turned out. Basically.
Things are coming together. Have you got the land picked out?
We haven't yet. We definitely have looked at different lands, so we know that there are indigenous areas of bush available for purchase, but we need to continue raising the funds for it. So far, we've raised enough funds for 40 hectares of land, and we need another 260 hectares. So we're about just less than a sixth of the amount of the forest, which is a big chunk, but we're looking for people. We want to invite people to become part of the project and to also get involved and help us get to the amount of money that we need to purchase the land here.
Okay, so how could someone help with the Vervet Forest project? They could give screenings of the movie, which would create awareness.
So we're looking for people who would like to come back when the forest is complete. So we've already got some researchers in place, but we're going to need a lot of hands-on help. And then we do have events coordinators internationally. So we've got one in UK, one in Europe, who can also help with, you know, places like USA and Canada. They can basically give support in people want to do from home. They can also, of course, come and volunteer in South Africa and see firsthand what's going on. And other things they could do is, we're looking for things like businesses who would like to leave a piece of land in Africa for wildlife. So some places have actually donated 1 hectare of land towards the forest, which is $1,200. And then we give them their businesses for t-shirts, and then they get their business name written on our sanctuary wall. So there's lots of things that people can do. We have wish lists of different medical supplies that we use to help the foundation, as well as to create the Vervet Forest project. So if anyone's interested in helping this to get there quicker, because it will get there, then they can contact me via our website, vervet.za.org, and then we can go from there. But yeah, it will definitely happen. We've got a big chunk of it. We're just trying to raise funds for the rest of it so that we can keep this land really for generations of wildlife to come in South Africa.
And as you said, not just the monkeys, but the other wildlife that's going to be naturally occurring there as well. I think the world needs more education centers like that as well, to just to explain to people the interaction between all the species and how the Earth supports or and can support all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's something now that, you know, we really can't waste any more time in looking after our planet and the forests. It's something that we need to do now. And we're hoping that people will become involved in the project and, you know, and contact us and really be part of the Vevet Forest.
And we're going to put details on those websites. And people can, of course, just Google the trailer of the movie and see what that is like. And anything else that you would like to add right now?
I think we've covered a lot, but you know, definitely for people to see animals as individuals, to see that it's so much bigger than, you know, just one group of animals. They are all individuals. They do all have feelings. And, you know, I really do plea for people to look out for them in whatever way they can, and also be conscious consumers. Look at the way they eat, look at the way they live. You know, let's really all play a meaningful role on this planet that we live in.
I thought you would say something like that. So I want to thank you, Josie, for bringing your story and the story of these little monkeys to us today. And thank you for the compassion and the environmental work that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great sharing the project. We're certainly very passionate about what we're doing, and would love people to join us. We really would.
Well, I am planning a trip back to Africa, so I may just see you face-to-face one day.
There we go. That would be wonderful to meet you in person.
Would be. Thank you very much. We will put more information up on our website, and hopefully you'll get a lot more support for your project, which is really a beautiful project.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us for our show next Friday, February 8th at noon, when we'll have Jen Dobell, a firefighter who is trying out a plant-based diet, and he'll be discussing with a naturopathic graduate and a former animal investigator. And a month from now, we have...
Well, this is something that is brand new. A friend of mine who is hopefully listening on the air right now, his name is Chris Anderson. I'm putting this out there. Shout out to Chris. Chris has, I've been working on him for years now since I've known him. And a year ago, he finally watched the film Earthlings, which if you haven't seen it, go to it. It's at YouTube and Vimeo. You can watch it there for free. This is a life-changing documentary, and it's often called The Vegan Maker. Mm-hmm. Well, did this film make Chris vegan? It certainly changed him. He said it has definitely impacted him. There's no longer the excuses that there's, like, it's okay to eat animals if they're treated okay. Mm-hmm. And he knows there's no humane way to kill someone who doesn't want to die. He knows that all the humane meat animals go to the same slaughterhouse. And since then, it's been about a year, he's been drastically cutting down his animal product intake, as he's told me. And it's been great listening to his progress. But he told me a couple weeks ago that he had eaten some meat because of peer pressure. Because I asked, because he said it made him sick. I said, why did you do it?
Interesting.
He said peer pressure from his family. Okay. Mm-hmm. Peer pressure. So that's not something that, you know, everyone feels that in the world. But
yeah, of course.
I don't actually feel pressured to eat animals myself.
But, you know, I think when you're transitioning, often you do.
So anyways, he said it made him so sick that he's going to now start a vegan challenge for the whole month of February, starting today. And this is our call to Chris to announce that Chris Anderson is trying vegan for the whole month of February. And if I've also given him resources, 22dayvegan.com, I think it is, veganuary.com, and the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart Program. Right. These are all free programs that you can join for free online, and they send you daily emails with support and advice from dietitians
and that. Lots of recipes.
Yeah. So I hope he signs up on one or a few of those. And I said to him, I will be his vegan mentor. If he has any questions, any difficulties, text me immediately and I will help. So So in a month from now, we'll see how it all goes, because he's truly making the effort right now. And in a month, we invite him to come to Animal Voices on the show to speak about his experiences, about what it's been like taking on this 1 month-long vegan challenge.
That will be interesting. So I'm looking forward to that.
About a month from now.
Animal Voices wants to connect with you online. Check out animalvoices.org, where you can stream or download the show and find other goodies and links. Our podcast is available through iTunes and Google Play. Stay in touch with us through our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and send us your suggestions and comments about the show. What do you think? Email at us at info@animalvoices.org. And we're going to leave you today with a song called The Animal Song by Savage Garden, which sadly isn't a band anymore. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. Remember, be kind to the animals.
This is Radio EcoShock on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM. There is big trouble at both poles. From Korea, scientist Malte Stucker explains why the Arctic is warming faster than the rest of the world, disrupting weather over the Northern Hemisphere. Then veteran Antarctic scientist Richard Levy tells about the double threat driving Antarctic ice into the sea to flood coastlines around the world. But first,
we are old climate veterans who have tried to do our part in every way we know how to keep our fossil fuel addicted civilization from driving off a cliff.